The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's 12 o'clock. Welcome to Taking Stock. It is the 1st of December 2023. And I'm joined by Johnny Boy in his puffer jacket. It is chilly, John, isn't it?
Yep, snow on the ground. A dusting.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think we should begin the Christmas. I got my, I'm in my Christmas shed, you know, because, of course, it is easy to be jolly. And, you know, you need to be wearing your Christmas hat, John, because we're rallied a little bit off the bottom. And, you know, it's is this the bottom? I think it is.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, by all means, get involved. Do you think it's the bottom? Have we seen the bottom? And I'll give a little bit of evidence here that I think it is the bottom. Okay. We're also going to look at a screener we've come up with, some stock ideas on the screener. John will explain what the screener is. But before we do that, by all means, hit that thumbs up button if you could. You know, subscribe to the channel. And in fact, we've got a couple of comments here, John, saying, where is it? Stephen. 5,000 subscribers by the end of the year is a very difficult, stiff target in the current market. People will start showing more interest when the market starts moving up. Some have just hunkered down. That is true. There's a lot less engagement on social media and stuff. People switch off, they look at their portfolio, and then don't look at it again. Macklin, also another one like that. Macklin, Justin, tell your Vox boss that the bottom of the longest small-cap bear market in a generation is not likely to be the best time to launch a Daily Shares podcast. But when things turn, Vox will reap the benefits. In the course, in my opinion. Well, you know, there's room for negotiation, but 5,000 by the end of the year is what we're after. By all means, right. So this is my thoughts, John, right, on the bottom of the market. And I think this is quite, I went through this. I say house builders, right, pretty much. Let me stop the share screen here, first of all. House builders, they're kind of like a barometer, aren't they, of the economy. Because not only is, you know, buying a house one of the biggest purchases someone will ever make, so they have to take it seriously, and it's quite a risky thing to do. But the industry itself supports so many other industries, you know, like different professionals, plumbers, all that, industrial supplies, all that stuff, DIY, everything. So, look at this, the house builders. I look at the charts on this. These are the house builders. I looked at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the big ones. Barratt, Bellway, Redrose, Persimmon, Taylor Wimpey. They hit their lows, okay? Barratt on the 29th of September, Bellway on the 29th of September, Redrow on the 12th of October, Persimmon on the 25th of October, and Taylor Wimpey on the 29th of September. And if you look at the charts here, you can see they've pretty much, you know, I've made up a little house building reference here. You can see these charts. Look at this. They're all kind of rallying. Bellway, that's Barratt first, Bellway. There's Crest off the bottom. That's the worst performer there of the lot. But, you know, Gleeson, which is a smaller one, Persimmon, Redrow. Taylor Wimpey's breaking out. It's like,
this sector has tried to rally before, as you can see. So, you know, I mean, obviously it got a bit lower. What was that, back in October? And, you know, I mean, the whole market bounced after October. But yeah, I mean, it has been sort of two steps forward, one step back for this sector. I don't think it's a dead cert that this is the end of a long sort of bear market in house building shares. They are very cheap, but then they've been trimming their forecasts, you know, quite radically. Van El has some news out today. Van El does groundworks for a number of sectors, but house building is one of them. And you know, they're sticking to their 4-year expectations, but what they've said today is that they expect, you know, difficult house building conditions to continue into the first half of next year, which is the second half of its financial year. So it's still tough out there for this sector. Still very tough.
But again, I'll give you some further evidence, John. Look at this, right? Listen to this then, right? So the indices, by the way, have hit their lows, recent lows, FTSE 100 October 2022, 11th, and FTSE 250, 12th of October, and AIM All Share, 26th of October. Now, let's go. I went back to the great financial crash, right? And these were the dates that the indices hit their lows. FTSE 100, 3rd of March, 2009. FTSE 250, Friday, 21st of November, 2008. AIM All Share, Friday, the 5th of December, 2008. So FTSE 250 was the first one. But look at this, the house builders, this is when they hit their lows. July the 8th, 2008. July, that's Barratt. Bellway, 2008. Redrow, 8th of July, 2008. Persimmon, 3rd of December. That was the last. and Tailwimpy just behind, just ahead of that, 25th of November. So they bottomed way before the indices did. And now we're seeing the house builders from bottomish, and they are slightly ahead of the indices. But I'm thinking, is everything priced in here? All the bad news is priced in. We know this is going to be tough for a while to come. But like I said, forecasts have been slashed already. That's already priced in, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was speaking to an investment trust manager a couple of weeks ago, and they are what you would definitely call a contrarian. It's a guy called Gary Channon, an investment trust called the Aurora Investment Trust. They have a pretty large exposure to the house building sector. Mm. And, you know, their view is that it's all about cash. So actually, you know, whilst obviously the market focuses on earnings, which you know have been getting much weaker for the house building sector, they're still able to generate potloads of cash, and they do that by basically curtailing land sales purchases. So yeah, actually, what Gary was saying was that the safety valve in the house building sector is essentially their control of the land purchasing market. So the person that suffers is the person selling the land, you know, the farmer who's selling the land, who has to take a much lower price. So you know, that contrarian view, you know, it does support the fact that you know, perhaps the worst is behind the house building sector. They are in a position to control their destiny to a large degree. And as I said, that cash is king in the sector. Mm. And they've got a real handle on that. But in 2008, the house building sector had run up enormous amounts of debt and was in serious trouble when the crisis came. It is very different this time around for this sector.
Yeah, but they bottomed in the 2008. Maybe they crashed faster.
Yeah,
they bounced. They bounced for 6 months before the indices rallied. Now they've got more cash.
It's not tea leaves. It's patterns in markets that don't necessarily repeat.
What I'm saying is they've now 2 months off the low. It's unusual. You see, companies rolling back over. I don't think we'll go straight up from here. Because in fact, AI investors said here on comments, it feels like we're starting to go sideways rather than down. Yes, that's what I think. All the time. When I looked at my portfolio, might be bottoming out. Will be interesting to hear what everyone else thinks. John's tip, this is from Supermono. John's tip on Anglian Direct is beginning to look interesting. Kelso trading vehicle of Tissue Matt picked up 3%. Let's look at Anglian Direct share price. You still holding those, John, I suppose? Are you still?
It bounced really, really quite sharply earlier this week. I assumed there was some stake building going on.
Above that level? Above that level, good to go there. It's looking good, that.
Yeah, it's kind of come up a little bit since, but you know, it had really, really strong bounce earlier in the week. And I must admit, I didn't pay attention to the news. But yeah, you go, where's the 29th Holdings and Company? We've got somebody saying, yes, as Supermono points out, 3% stake. Who is it again? Kelso Group. There you go.
Oh, okay, there we are. I looked at this yesterday, actually. Nice. Do you know, I also think that things are rallying. I mean, you don't get this kind of rally. Look at this. This is good energy. I still hold this. Look at that, John. Look at that chart.
Mm.
I mean, that's called berserk. Yeah, yeah. And that was below net asset value, right? And it's still cheap, I think, in my mind. I think brokers got a 475 target, but that's 12-month target, because it's way above that going further out. And even, you know, stuff like Destiny Farmers had a sort of fall off and then rallied, things like that. But, you know, I think we are the bottom of the market, I think, is in. We may go see sideways, some stocks start rallying, but I do think we're there. And it's not going to be a pleasant time going forward. I think it'll still be a bit bumpy, but I do think the bottom of the market is here. Because, you know, like I said, it's down to interest rates, and if we think that they are peaked, you know, the next movement is down. When that's going to be, that's, you know, debatable. But Ben says, I normally listen to you on 1.5 speed, so you sound very strange when live. Yeah, I've tried that. I don't like listening to people on 1.5 speed. It sounds like it's almost makes me a bit anxious, like they're trying to rush things, you know. What do you think of Molten Ventures? Yeah, one of those things, that's one of those investment companies, like all of them, they're going to turn with the market. Good run with the market. What's the other? I've got a few of those in the mid-cap thing. There's another one as well. IPO is another one, actually, by the way. Like
IPO's
that.
IPO.
You know, they'll turn when they turn fast. Like asset managers. Once the market turns, they'll all rally in pretty much, you know?
Yeah. There's a few bits of news out today from companies that you would describe as investment companies. Molten Ventures, just looking there, price to book is, you know, it's a third. Huge discount, you know.
Sorry, what have I forgotten to do here? I meant to, someone's reminded me there. Just quick look at the indices here. It's all up. today. FTSE 100 is at the most. And in fact, my investment sort of ETF of the FTSE 350 is doing very well. It's broken previous resistance. But if you look at Dr. Martens, you weren't here the day before yesterday.
I did have a good look at it.
Awful, but they are bouncing after that. I think it was 25% drop yesterday. But some of the rise, that's 250, is it? Some of the rises here, Anglo-American, Antofagasta, Rio Tinto, Glencore.
That's a decent numbers out of China.
Yeah, China's numbers above 50, wasn't it? The PMI, that means they're back into expansion. So this is, it's shaping up here, you know? Ooh, looking very good, I think. I quite like the direction we're heading in. Yeah, let's look at the front page of Vox here. What's, I got ladies' wear there. There we are. Marula Mining initiates phase one exploration at Nuyuri. And Nuri is graphite.
Graphite, we've spoken about graphite quite a lot. Yes, I mean, this is, I spoke to the chief executive of this company a while, but I mean, and he told me that, these sort of graphite flake, you could just literally sort of pick them up off the ground around some of his projects. It's aqueous traded, aqueous listed.
Okay.
But gets, really serious volumes going through it. And I think that, there's definitely some decent assets behind this company.
Yeah,
graphite, very important component of the energy transition, EVs in particular.
Do you know, I was very surprised that day that Mind Gym, it did go down at the start, but I thought it was going to get hammered. Mm. This market is very brutal for companies, and I looked at Mind Gym's results.
When it got hammered last week.
And I thought, they're going to get hammered today.
Yeah, I think that happened last week, though, didn't it?
So the directors, the CEO's gone to chairman, and they've got a new CEO in. But the figures aren't that good, And if you look at it, they are a global provider of human capital and business improvement solutions. Mm, mm. Essentially, they go in and they help people with the companies with their cultures and all that stuff. It's one of these things, I think, that companies will spend on with plenty of money around. How can we improve our culture? But when you go into a recession and stuff, and they had a tough time in lockdown as well, because they do a lot of face-to-face meets and all that stuff. And I think they've gone to Zoom a lot now. But it's one of those things that companies will spend on good times. How do we improve our culture and all that stuff? How do we feng shui and all that stuff? I don't know if it's that. But if you look at the figures, you can see, it's gone from 26 to 20 million.
Yeah.
And if you could just, they've gone from a profit, the EBITDA, to a loss. Cash at bank, I thought that would take them down a loan, 2.1 from 4.5. And I thought, ooh, here we are. But the chart is literally, I had an alert on this crossing the 50-day moving average today. So it literally went down, come back up. So
yeah, you see, we got savaged there.
Yeah, the trading update.
So the damage was done. I mean, I think I think this is what you might call sort of discretionary corporate spending.
Yeah.
As you say, that when times are good, companies can splash out on the nice to haves, rather than the must haves, which they need to keep business ticking over.
That's why I miss you, John. You came up with those phrases, corporate discretionary spending.
Yeah,
I can't just put it off the top of my head. It's a lot more professional.
But in the good times, they would have argued that this isn't discretionary. That focusing on employee well-being and things that, as you say, improve the culture, improve sales and business culture are not discretionary. But it seems like I thought the most interesting thing about the results was the difference between the US and the European performance. Mm. US fell off a cliff. US got absolutely smashed. In terms of the revenues from the region, and I think that's quite interesting because we got this idea that it's Europe and the UK that have been suffering economically, and that the US is all fine and dandy, but that would suggest otherwise.
Yeah, let's look at that. So US, you went from 16 to 16 to 11, whereas 10.1 to 9.8 for the European. Middle East.
So I think it's quite intriguing that the weakness in this company has been in the US rather than over here.
Let's whip through some of these. Ben said, thanks, Morrow. I'm a holder of Anglian Direct and hadn't picked up about Kelso. Chart looking bullish. Yes, looking good. Michael says, finally bought some good energy today. Should have pulled the trigger 3 months ago. Thanks, Dave, for the tip. I don't do tips. I just tell you what I'm investing in, that's all. They're not always right. It's been an extraordinary week for Destiny and good energy. I was buying Crest as the assets were on a 50% sale, says Ben. Yeah, Crest hasn't rallied as strong as the others. If you look at the sort of house builders here, let me just show the chart there. Has it got some debt or something? I don't know, because, like I said, it's still struggling a bit. Whereas if you look at Taylor Wimpey, That literally, you can see the previous highs here. It's literally is breaking out. It's Teletubbies is the best on a health on a balance sheet health wise. I looked at it. I put them all through the spreadsheets, and that is the healthiest.
Crest hasn't got a lot of debt. I mean, it's just got sitting on net cash from the looks of things.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, as I say, that's the difference between house builders today. House builders back in 2008 when the financial crisis hit. But, I mean, they are valued. You know, we talk about earnings, but, you know, the value in house builders valued on, you know, they say their price to book, the value of their assets versus the share price. And, you know, I guess the worry is that the value of their land banks will be written down. But that's why they have been reining in land purchases. And when they're ready to pull the trigger, when the market improves, they are in the, you know, driving seat of the land market. And that is the thesis. That's why you should potentially buy them.
Let me just say something to all IR people out there. This is investment relations, right? Don't go sneaking RNSs out at 6 o'clock at night thinking people won't see them, all right? Now, the company I'm specifically talking about is Ceres Power here. Last night, look at this, RNS came out.
Big downgrade, yeah.
At 6 o'clock. It's like, the latest time? Is it half six you can do, I think, the latest time? But I think cut off. But they did come out with this at 6 o'clock at night. So the company noted the interim results in September that the outcome for the financial year will be dependent on the timing of securing new licensed partners. The company is engaged in a number of discussions with potential licensed partners. An agreement with most imminent in the new licenses. Unlikely to be signed in time for the associated revenue to be recognised. Well, therefore, revenue for the full year is expected to be around a 20 to 21 million.
I mean, to give the investor relations people, the PR and the company some leeway on this one. You know, the rule is that once you have price sensitive information, that it has to be released to the market. And so,
just before six, did they?
Maybe they did. Maybe at 5 o'clock or, you know, 4:30, they realised that contract wasn't going to get signed in time for the year end. And they did. And if that's the case, and you have to give them the benefit of the doubt that it is.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do. Because there are rules. There are rules.
And
once they've got that information, then they've got to release it to the market.
Okay, let me say one thing. Isn't it funny how good news seems to happen just in time for 7 a.m.? Bad news never seems to happen then. It seems to happen pretty much at 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is ever under the delusion that if you put something out late, no one's going to notice.
Hopefully not.
But I do think there are rules. And as I say, I would give, in this case, Sarah's the benefit of the doubt that actually they got that news late in the day and had to put it out there.
Another late bit of news coming out actually last night, but it wasn't a bad thing. I think I said for a long time they need to raise money, and people said they don't. And I said just read their final results. It says they need to raise money. It was Ondo, and so they've raised 1.8 million. And it was fine. It was like the 21 pence the closing price, 20 pence. It has come off a bit. They raised just over £1 million, 20.5 pence. It wasn't a discount, a big discount. So, and they need this. It's a good company and, good growth there. And so it's nice to see that they've raised some money. Because that's the thing, you know, investors hate companies raising money. If you are an owner of a company, you're proud of raising money. That's the thing. You say, I've got people want to invest in the company. That's what it is.
I think,
same thing, you know?
I don't think investors are...
In the market, they're scared of it because it's largely a discount and it can be... I mean, you're not going to get a big fundraiser away unless you do a massive discount in this market. It's really small.
But that's the whole point of being a listed company.
Yes, I know, but people understand that. They're scared. People are scared by... You mentioned placing the people and they say, there's no placing needed. So, hang on a sec. If you do a placing... And you get money in, that removes one of the biggest risks to any small company, cash. You've got to have cash. It's like the blood in your body. You know, if you haven't got that, you can die, full stop. You've got to have cash. So now they've got cash, that's a big risk removed, you know? So it's a good thing.
But I think there are placings and there are placings, you know? There are placings that happen because the company is... You know, on Lysport needs that plasma, you know, needs that injection of blood to keep it going. And that's the kind of placing you don't want to see. But placings that happen to drive growth. And we've seen, you know, I think we spoke about some placings recently being done at small premium to share prices. They're no bad thing. And therefore you don't worry about the dilution. You
know, yeah,
no, discounted life saving placings, no. Placings to drive growth, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Kuth was there as a premium, which is price, yeah, a good company, but that's come off. So now below replacing price, which is like, look at Kuth. I did think that, a lot is priced in there. But talking about massive discounted placings. Now, I never understood this, right? I read the update on Rulai Simons recently, and it rallied like crazy off it. Now, if you read through, I thought, am I missing something here? Because I didn't see what was, you know, so amazing about the I mean, they are like a tiddler, so anything can happen. So they had a trading update on the 24th, and they went through there, and they said it was a bit of a miss. The period of revenue decrease to 794, and I don't know what they're making a loss here. They had cash of like $500,000, and they're, you know, burning a little bit. I thought, there we are. Lost the period of 1.4, and I thought, hang on a sec, what's going on here? So it rallied like crazy, right? And then they just done a placing, so it was at like 40 pence, I think. No, 20 pence, and they done a placing at 10. So but they raised a decent chunk of money, though. I mean, they raised like 4 million.
And they needed to raise. They needed to raise.
Yeah, that was bigger than their market cap. It was like, what? So, I mean, look at this. So, that will, you know, keep them going for a long time. So they literally done how much then? Yeah, approximately 4 million they'd done at 10 pence. So that's decent. And the market cap, like I said, before that raising, the market cap was 2.7. So we haven't updated the shares in issue yet. They haven't been issued, but that's you know, on one hand, you're thinking that's a hell of a, that's why you should never chase prices up like that. Because look at that, it went up to 59 pence, and now it's down at 11. It's like, wow, that's a heck of a ride. But they've got a lot of cash there now to be getting on with. So, you know, if you're ever in doubt whether the company needs, you know, to raise money or not, just hold fire, have patience, because it'll happen sooner or later.
But it's true. There are other signs are often there when a company does need to raise money, and, you know, that trading stage, when it's got £1 million in the bank. Yeah. And it's burning £1 million a year,
it's gonna
need to raise some money unless you know the trajectory of the sales changes significantly.
Yeah, unless the cost
and unless it can, you know, turn those sales into profits efficiently, which isn't always the case as companies scale up. So the signs are often there. They're often there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look at some. I did look at the followers there. Sondra, I don't know what's going on there. So it seems like one of the major shareholders. It's been a bit of a nightmare there for. Yeah, just that picture. I'm not going to go back again. That picture is on the advert. Look, I'll show you. What the heck is cats pooing calendars? What the heck? In fact, one of the comments there says, you need to clear your cash, Justin, because some of the adverts you've been getting distinctly dodgy. It's not mine. It's not me.
People like cats. I didn't realise they like pooing cats.
No. It's like that is... cats are okay, but that's going down the scale a bit. So they placed these shares with Peel Hunt, the broker. Basically, Siemens have sold out, it seems like, on Sondrel. And have they raised money recently? Because that was the problem. They've missed a couple of contracts here, and they need to raise money, but I don't think they have. So that is not pleasing to see one of the biggest shareholders sold out. And because of that, they've dropped 46% today.
I must admit, I don't know much about Sondrel. It's growing pretty quickly. But when you have sort of large shareholders who are sort of industrials like that, it's often because, you know, they have taken a strategic stake because they see something in the product that is... And aligned with what they, you know, as a customer, Siemens might be doing. That's the worry.
They missed on a trading update back here in August. And I mean, Paul Hill, in fact, I'm with Paul this afternoon, but he did buy into this before that trading update. And look, I've written them off pretty much now. Because he did say at the time, they're quite lumpy contracts these have. They're designing chips. And they missed a little bit there. And then it seems like they need to raise cash, but they haven't. And yet now... Like I said, you know, bad news follows bad news. That's why, you know, you should always look for companies. Good news, more good news tends to come out. And so now one of the biggest shareholders has dumped pretty much, or given back the stock to the thing. So your screener, here we are. Explain what's going on here.
Cheap growth, basically. You know, companies that are growing. So the criteria is the PE less than it was 5 years ago? That's an indication of cheapness. And is it on a forecast basis less than 15, which is not, you know, it's not super cheap, but it's relatively cheap. And then we want, you know, some evidence of EPS growth. So are the earnings expected to grow next year? And have earnings grown on an annualized basis over the last 6 years. And this was all that came out of the FTSE auction.
I can see what you're doing here, John. You've managed to sneak one of your stocks in there, haven't you? H&T's in there. Oh, by the way, one of my stocks is in there. They're fabulous looking companies, but I didn't realize one of mine is in there. How is it doing, H&T? Is it doing well?
It's all right, it's up a little bit. So, it had a nice jump the other day, but then it sort of came off a little bit. But I don't know, we live in straitened times, and I do think that this is a very well-run company. Mm. It's in a bit of a sweet spot. Sweet spot, and it refinanced or it raised some money recently to fund expansion, and again it sort of makes people nervous, but I would argue that's for the right reasons.
Yeah, that's good though. Like I said, the chart, the series, it's rallied strongly, of course, from 2021, and so it literally went from 260 to £5. You're going to have a bit of congestion then, a bit of consolidation. Mm-hmm. People taking profit, of course. So you've got a series of lower highs, and then broke down here, and then it broke back up above that support level and this line, and in back above 200 moving. That's good though. That means it's holding its own. It may need to consolidate for a bit longer, but that means it's not going lower properly. So that's good. So what else was on that list?
Billington.
What do they do then?
Structural steel.
Oh, yeah, we've covered those, actually. That's right, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's good as well.
They've been rallying quite hard, quite strong for a while. But, yeah. I mean, this is, again, it's, I'm a gate like Van El. The construction market has been tricky. Severfield, actually, is the other one in that space. But there is a need for... particularly investment in infrastructure, a lot of that, needs big steels going in it. I think this whole sector is not expensive. The worries about the macroeconomic worries have sort of really filtered through it. What's Billington trading on? I can't remember. But Van El was trading on 10 times forecast earnings. It's a nice looking company. And as I say, well positioned you would assume we start to get some serious sort of infrastructure spending. I know the country is broke, but what country isn't? But without that spending, there's no sort of hope for recovery. I could see an infrastructure cycle, kicking off in earnest next year.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I ran a screen recently, actually, Ramsden's came up on it as well. So this is on your screen as well. Ramsden's, do you know what they do?
Foreign exchange.
Yeah. And jewellery retail as well. So jewellery is gold, is it?
Yeah, well, you sort of like that's not a million miles away from H&T.
H&T very similar, yeah. So obviously a very strong sector. But that's a good reason to look at the sector, H&T and Rams, and think, well, they're holding up here. Same kind of thing as the H&T charts rallied strongly. Yeah. Now consolidation phase happening, So but it needs to get above that 200. H&T has got above that 200 moving average again. So they're further along. So interesting sector.
Two companies in the same space, strangely, popping out of this screen.
Jet2, that's going back over time, it's been a cracking performer, Jet2, isn't it?
I mean, if you look at the long term, look at the long term share price. Having said that, you wouldn't have been very happy, a couple of years after IPO there. But if you look at that long term share price.
On a weekly. Weekly. What you can see from 2007, it's gone from 79 pence up to 18. Drop there in a weekly chart. That was
if you take out those mad spikes, and take out the sort of COVID related fall, you've actually got a share price that has increased very, very steadily there. In pretty much a straight line. It's albeit one that's bouncing around, but the underlying trend is steadily upwards.
Yeah.
There's some news not that long ago. It's hardly a small cap now, so two and a half billion. In the US, that would definitely be considered a small cap. But the latest trading update, 23rd of November, everything's moving in the right direction. 24% revenue growth, 47% pre-tax profit growth. Dividend up 30 by a third. Christmas bookings, winter bookings are strong. Mm-hmm. It's a strong player in the travel sector. And as we've spoken about before, travel is, it's where consumer spending is going at the moment. People want, having been locked down for God knows how long, and spending on stuff, people now want to spend on experiences and enjoying themselves. And travel is a big part of that.
Yeah, well, Ingenta here, leading provider. This is the smallest, I think, there, isn't it, amongst them? The 18 million market cap. I like
the look of this. Do you know what? I looked at this
up a little bit. Well, they're leading provider of world-class software and services to the global publishing industry. Please announce. So they released the results, September to the 30th of June. Revenue's up by 9%. 80% of group revenues are recurring in nature, which is good. EBITDA increased 26% to 1.58. Cash from operations, $380,000. Cash balance is 2.6. So, profitable, and they've got a decent cash balance there. So, it's very liquid because you can see, look at that. Average volume there is about
9%. But it's got some big shareholders. So, we look at the list.
But never that. Look at that. It's done really well from across 200 moving average back in October 2021. And it's seemingly not seen this. The bear market hasn't experienced it pretty much.
I just think it's completely below the radar, this company.
Yeah.
But you're right about it being liquid. I mean, directors own over half the company. And then there's a big investor who's got nearly a quarter. This company's been around a very, very long time. I remember looking at it years ago when I was an analyst. And they were very much in sort of scholarly publishing. And that was it. But it looks like, they've become, I think, They were trying to sort of it was a tool for actually publishing sort of academic papers and such like. Now I think it's more of a software company. But having popped out the screen is what I'd like to have a look at a little bit more, because as I say, I think it's underneath many, many people's radar, and it seems a very different company from the one perhaps people knew many, many years ago. The illiquidity thing is definitely something to note. But then also, if you've got directors owning a fair old chunk of the company, they've got serious skin in the game. Their incentives are aligned with yours as a shareholder if you own these shares.
Yeah. Gregory says, some friends of mine, we mentioned this a while back actually, some friends of mine have been visiting Everyman Cinema, E-Man ticker, said it was the best experience they've ever had going to the flicks and now wouldn't go anywhere else. Yeah, we've got one, those of us in Winchester, and we went there, and it's quite nice because you can sit there and have a drink, in nice seats, and it's smaller. It's almost more tailored. But look at this. We did look at the chart.
Lovely company.
I did say this. I said, when this turns, companies like this, it'll do very well because it's been hammered. And look at that. It's now, like I said, it literally crossed down 200-day moving average May 2022. And now, look at that. It's just crossed up now. So, the downtrend is nearly ended, probably, I think. It needs to get above that previous high, 66.5. But that's looking good in the chart. I mean, again, we're seeing a bottoming of lots of. This is in that area, leisure, and which has been hammered.
Let me just get that picture off the screen.
I know. Oh, yeah, I'll do it now. Feedback. That was inappropriate.
Yeah, very much so. You're right. The experience is fantastic. I've been to those cinemas a few times myself. My only worry about a company like Everyman, and again, this is something we've talked about in the leisure sector, notably, is the cost of scaling up this business. So, they have to take on significant amounts of debt to expand the company. It's not cheap building a new cinema.
No, they've got some directors buying here. This guy, Blue Coast, Michael Rosehill, non-executive director, is also director of Blue Coast. Following the above trend, they bought some. Total holding has risen to 23. What's the level they make an offer? It's like 25 or 30, was it? But he's buying there. They are. That's why that's going up. Very little liquid, liquidity there, and he's buying.
But so I'm looking at sort of last full year end, which is end of December. I will tell you in the half years what the net debt is. End of last year, total borrowings. Sorry, net debt was 105
million. Gross debt, 24. It doesn't say what net debt. So net debt at the end of the period was 21.3. Okay.
That's curious. That's curious because that's showing up as different to what I'm looking at.
At the end of August, net debt has fallen to 17.9. So it's coming down. 17.9 there. They're making a bit of a loss.
I'm not. I would have to have a look at that. I do wonder if that includes property debt.
Probably not. 58 million. Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, there's that worry about debt, but net debt, 70 or 18 million they've got there. Cool. So any more comments here on the thing? RNS late Friday evening probably makes the bad news seem worse. Looks like the company's trying to hide it. Yes.
I'm
should there be a global exchange that is open 24 hours, but only open in your origin. So ARM listed or enlisted on global exchange, but open UK trading hours. That way we won't get useless exchange like skint LSE. Oh, okay. Mm. I don't see. What do you mean? London Stock Exchange? It's not skint. It owns quite. It's doing very well.
LSE is a parent company, is doing extremely well. You know what I mean?
But yeah.
I think, you know, we've talked about this before, but that's a lot of that's driven by the sort of data, the data business.
Yeah, data, and also they own quite a few exchanges, aren't they, around the world?
Yeah. The Bulls of Italia is part of the London Stock Exchange group as well.
Yeah,
there has been. I mean, this is one of the arguments about owning the London Stock Exchange, because there was, you know, further consolidation expected in the exchanges business. So, you've got a few very, very large companies. And one of the reasons LSE bought Refinitiv, if you remember, was a poison pill to stop them being taken over. Because consolidation was very much on the agenda of the exchange industry.
It's almost like the picks and shovels. You know, we're all looking at stocks and shares and companies listed on the exchange. If you'd bought the LSE, I mean, look at this, that's a daily chart. But you look at the weekly chart of the LSE, right? Back in 2002, it was 361 a share. It's now 89 quid a share.
Yeah, fantastic.
Picks and shovels.
Fantastic business.
See? Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'd say it's a fantastic business. It has, you know, it has a very strong market position. all sorts of things about sort of some of the chaos behind the scenes at the LSE.
But
it's a the exchange market is a strong one. There will be more consolidation. It seems gone quiet on that front for a while.
I know some people like agronomics. They've granted $25 million guarantee to agronomics and biofuel. Obviously, they invested in these. Sort of cutting edge food sort of space, everything from lab meat to protein and stuff and all that stuff.
But again, we were talking about investment companies at the start, and this is what I was going to say. We've got a couple of bits of news today.
Yeah.
So you've got agronomics. You've also got a company called Net Scientific, which is on homepage, which has invested today in plastic recycling. Creating this sort of circular economy is very, very important. They are essentially investment companies, and you know what they are is trading at, you know, so Net Scientific is trading at 60% book value, Agronomics is trading at 70% book value. So you've got very large discounts to the value of the assets in there.
Yeah.
They will do well when sentiment improves.
Yeah. I agree with you, but it's a double. I've been saying that with asset managers, but likely, you know, a lot of companies will as well. So the markets,
that's true. But companies, you know, and I talk about the investment trust sector quite a bit, but you know, you've got some very broad discounts there. And so what will happen when sentiment improves? Sentiment discounts at their widest level on average across the UK investment company sector since they were in 2008.
And you get the double whammy, don't you? Because people will stop redeeming or selling shares, and so then assets, you know, they won't have to sell any more shares.
You'll get a double whammy. The discount will close because sentiment is improving. The value of the company is based on buying and selling of shares, not redemptions like open ended funds. But you'll also get the double whammy of the net asset value starting to rise as well. So it's a good way to get a sort of magnified return, I think, the investment company sector.
Yeah. There's a bit of macro news here. Look at that. UK housing market shows new signs of strength. British house prices rose unexpectedly in monthly terms for the third time running in November, adding to signs that the housing market downturn has abated. Mortgage Lend Nationwide has said house prices rose by 0.2% on the month in November after a 0.9% increase in October. A Reuters poll, economist said, a fall of 0.4%. So compared with a year ago, house prices were 2% lower. The smallest such drop in 9 months. That's quite bullish, see? House builders.
I would still encourage people to just look around, see what your local market's doing, because I'm seeing a lot of for sale signs up. And
Part of the problem was lack of supply as well, you know? People are trying to buy houses. It's a tight market, the UK house market.
The more supply you get on the market, the more likely it is that you'll see price falls because people have to accept lower offers.
Also, look at this. UK stocks end November upbeat note mid-cap index logs best month this year. So yeah. FTSE 250 managed to build healthy gains in November. Index also had its best month. It's up about 9%, I think, the 250.
Yeah, very good.
And finally, also, manufacturers still declining, but more slowly. So UK manufacturing remains in decline at a much slower pace than recent months. The PMI jumped from near historic lows to its highest level since April this morning at 47.2. The PMI reading still suggests the sector's in decline, below 50, but improved figures are a sign the sector is potentially turning a corner. See, some green shoots here, John. Three stories. You know, I could have found some negative stories, I expect, but I didn't see them, really. They're just saying, what we're seeing is, if it's getting worse, the decline isn't as fast. So maybe, maybe we're almost there on certain things.
Yeah.
But it's still sort of declining, but not as such a fast pace. And so in the end, it will stop, and then it will improve. So, hopefully.
You know, well, I for once may concede that it does feel like things are about to turn for the better. It doesn't feel like they could get any worse.
Yeah. No, it does feel like, it's been hammered, the markets have. Mm. But I do agree with, who was saying it, AI invested, that it doesn't feel as if it's going down now. It feels like almost sideways to up a little bit. Some stocks are rallying, but before it was like everything was going down. So almost a bit more stable. And when you get that, with a bit of stability, it helps with sentiment, doesn't it? People don't seem falling anymore. Hang on a sec. Yeah. But I can't really say, I think the market's turning. I do as well. I think a new year.
Yeah. Well, we've got a few more results out next week that are worth looking at to give you some clues. On the beach, talking going back to travel. Mm. I think their finals are out on Tuesday. Oxford Metrics, which you talked about. Doing really well. Their finals are out on Tuesday as well. And who else is there? Barclay Group on Friday, interim. So we'll see what the London housing market's like.
Yeah. And I would say to people, don't be tempted to jump in before results. On a bull market, you can do that. In a bear market, you can't. And it's worth seeing warts and all what's actually happening. And in fact, one of the companies I've been watching quite closely is Future PLC. They're coming out, I think, is it? What's the date there? I think maybe next week, 7th, I think. Is it 7th next week? Yeah. So then they came out, Future PLC as well. So I'm not going to take a position in that until I actually read the financial results and see, because the trading updates, like I said, is the highlights of what they want to show you. And their trading update was okay. It's a 254 just in operating profit. But I think, okay, but that's what you want to show us. When you get the full results come out, then you can dig through it and see, because they don't mention any debt or any of that stuff in the trading update, all that stuff. So it's worth looking at.
Yeah, well, we got AJ Bell on Friday, Thursday as well, final. So we might get a feel for where they feel market sentiment is at.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Cheers, Johnny. And don't forget, everyone, if you can hit that, thumbs up button. Oh, John, did I figure out what that was? Let's know if it works.
Just the balloon thing.
Yeah, it was Apple. There we are. It's Apple video reaction thing, and there's apparently you're supposed to get likes if you do that, but it's not working. I don't know why. But yes, anyway, put a thumbs up, please, if you can, and subscribe to the channel. We've got to get it 5,000 for the year in. Come on, we can do it. Tell everyone we can do it. You can unsubscribe afterwards.
I'm not getting any balloons.
Are you on Apple?
No,
there we are. That's why. Okay. There we are. Balloons there. And don't forget, download the Vox Markets app, it's free download. I did two before. I said two things, and that's why I did it. I thought someone was attacked me or something, but there we are. That's it. Have a nice weekend, everyone, and speak you next week. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.